Shareable is part of C-Suite Radio. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this either is or will become your favorite podcast. This is Shareable, the podcast so good, you got to tell someone about it. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. In every episode, I talk with someone about the impact that people and technology have had on their career and their lives. So, let's get to it. Hello, I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard, as you know, and have come to love. Today's guest is Tom Schwab. Tom helps small business owners, entrepreneurs, and solopreneurs get featured on leading podcasts that their prospects are already listening to. He then shows them how to turn those listeners into customers. Tom is the Chief Awesome Sauce Officer or something like that over at Interview Valet, which is a totally awesome company that you're going to learn all about if you listen to this episode. But not only that, you're going to learn something about yourself. And maybe, just maybe, this episode is shareable. Welcome back to Shareable. I'm here today with Tom Schwab. Tom, who are you and what do you do?
Jeff, I am I call it a digital marketing engineer. So I might take my background from engineering and change it with the marketing and help people get on podcasts that their ideal customers already listen to so they can not only break through the noise, but get in on the conversation and turn listeners into leads.
So this is like seeing the Matrix. It's what the kids would call meta right now, because here I am on a podcast talking to someone who brings guests to podcasts. It's sort of like a snake eating its own tail, wouldn't you say?
I would say we're pulling back the curtain and showing you how it really works. And, you know, I always say it's not magic. It's not amazing. It's really just a reproducible system, and people will look at it and go, wow, that makes sense.
Well, I love systems and processes, so you had me at hello. But what I'd like to do today, before we get to talking all about what you do over at Interview Valet and all the beautiful and talented people you have working on the team, I want to dig into you and your life. So get ready. You're about to talk with what has been described in my last podcast as the Oprah of the business podcast world. And I think I might use that forever. So here we go. Before we dive too deeply into anything, I like to know who I'm talking to. And it gives the audience a sense of the level of technological expertise and behavior of the guests that I'm speaking to. So today, I'm going to ask you four quick questions about how you conduct yourself using technology and the internet. And that'll help to set up everything that we're about to talk to. So are you ready?
Perfect.
First question, are you an early adopter, a late adopter, or somewhere in between?
Early adopter.
Excellent. Rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 in your technology usage, 10 being completely fluent, 1 being dur?
A struggling 7.
A struggling 7. So like you're like constantly fighting to preserve a 7?
Well, the thing is that like some people were just born into the technology and, you know, they were born at a 7. I'm 52 years old. I'm not a digital native, but I love it. So I'm always trying to learn more.
You're what is known as a digital migrant. You arrived at it later in your life because it wasn't something that you were brought up with, you know, fluently from the beginning.
As long as you don't call me like a digital illegal alien, I'm good with it.
That's totally cool. I consider myself part of the bridge generation in that I grew up in a time where I can understand people that are older than me, and I can also understand millennials and show them how to use some of the technologies that they feel like they're fluent in to actually get what they're trying to accomplish in life. So we're both not digital natives, but I think we both have a lot to bring to the conversation. So I'm going to give you four options. I want you to tell me which of the four you're most likely to do online. So I need you to pick one of these four, but it helps to give me an idea of your behavior online. So are you more of a creator, someone who curates content and shares it with others, somebody who comments on other people's stuff, or quietly watches?
Curator. Definitely a curator.
Okay, good. And final question, iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Cool. All right, so let's set the stage. For those that have listened to a podcast before, you've heard me give this spiel before, but I think it's good to introduce you, Tom, to this. And that's that every human being that I have ever encountered, to my knowledge, has been impacted by two forces. And I believe that we all are in today's day and age in 2017. And those two forces and factors are people and technology. None of us have had an experience where we weren't shaped in some way by an experience we had with a person, where they said something at the right time in the right place, and it just shifted our perspective and potentially our career path or our life path. And then simultaneously, technology enables us to do these incredible things in our lives, but it also sometimes disrupts what we thought we were meant to do and takes away opportunities. So I like to explore those two forces and figure out how they've shaped my guests' lives and their careers. So where I like to start with it is I want to ask you about how the way that you've chosen to use technology in your life has changed your life. The way that, you know, you're 52, you said, and you're a struggling seven. Talk to me about how the choices you've made has changed where you are right now versus where you could have been.
Very much so. I mean, my first job out of college, I was a mechanical engineer at the U.S. Naval Academy. My first job was running nuclear power plants. So I was around technology all the time. And, you know, what I saw is that don't get focused on the technology as much as that's a tool. But how can you use that? How can you build systems? How can you leverage that? Because the technology that was so amazing, you know, in 1990s, it's now a history course. You know, what we're learning right now is going to be a history course in 10 years from now. So for me, it's always been learn the technology, but don't bow down to the technology. It's just a tool in order to use the strategy better, you know, to leverage that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always like to think it's not the drill, it's the hole. That whole idea, like you're not selling the tool itself, you're always selling the solution. So to that point, you know, you see technology as a tool, and obviously that the technology that you began with is much different than what you're working with today, I think. But how would you say that it's actually impacted where the path of your career went, the choices you've made about what you chose to adopt or what you chose to let pass? Who you've met, all those sort of things.
Oh, sure. From that standpoint, I mean, it. I can go through the entire thing. So, you know, I left the Navy, went into the corporate world, was in sales and marketing. And at that time, if you wanted to sell something, you had to go there in front of them, build the sales force, do all of these things, and was very successful in that. But as I sold that distributorship business back, what I realized, and this was probably 2006, 2007, was that the world has changed. If you want to connect with people, you don't have to drive, go into their office. And so really the next business that we built was based off of inbound marketing. We were one of the first e-commerce companies to do that. And really using content, the blogs, that sort of things in order to, you know, engage people, convert them, all the rest of that. So that changed my life. And then after we sold that business and I was helping other people do it, what I realized is once again, the technology had changed, you know, that what we did 8 years before with blogs wasn't working so well anymore, right? Blogs had become sort of saturated and passe. And so with that, I looked at, said, how can you use those same strategies, those same ideas, but with new technology? And for us, that new technology was podcasting. You know, that's what people were listening to. And I loved that from the standpoint of the tools that we have today connect people so much, and got to, you know, I think it was Inc. Magazine last summer said that podcasting was the new networking. And it was the way to meet people. So it's, you know, the strategy hasn't changed, but the tools and the technology has changed drastically in that my career from going to, you know, working in a Fortune 500 company to being selling to growing a business with blogs to now, you know, helping other people grow businesses, getting on podcasts.
So it sounds to me a lot like you. You simultaneously do and don't think about the technology a lot. It's like it's just there as a tool facilitating what you're trying to do, and you've really rolled with those punches throughout the course of your career, going from one thing to the next, and just watching what's working, what's happening, and seeing where there's opportunity. You've just kind of looked at technology as that thing that enables you.
I have always looked at technology as a tool and as a multiplier, and it multiplies your brilliance or your stupidity. And the way I talk about this is that a buddy of mine had a tree that fell down, and he had an artist came in with the chainsaw and carved this beautiful eagle in the tree that had fallen down, right? So they used the same tool that I used and almost cut my leg off. I was cutting wood and almost cut my leg off because it wasn't the tool. It was the ingenuity, the brilliance, or in my case, the stupidity behind that. So I'm always cautious to just say, oh, technology. No, technology is a tool. It's a multiplier, but you have to know how to use it and have the strategy because, you know, the more powerful email system can either connect you with more people or allow you to spam more people. And it's not the tool, it's the user.
Absolutely. I always say that in any, you know, and outside of this podcast, we have a social business agency in Philadelphia. And I always say that the three elements of any successful initiative are technology, culture, and process. And the technology is that speed and efficiency that it can bring. But without the culture, the people and the talent and the process to know what you're doing and doing it in a replicable, scalable way, it's never going to work. So I'm totally in line with that, as you were saying. And I was almost picturing the Venn diagram that we use for that in my head. So I think we're totally spot on in how we see that. So next question I have for you, though, I want to talk to you a little bit about people. So you mentioned that you see technology as a tool. And from there, you really talked about the move from blogs through until, you know, and inbound marketing until you got up to podcasting, which you read and repeated is the new networking, which I 100% agree with. I've met incredible people on this show already, and it's I can already see what's happening with it. So I want to talk about that part, the people part of your life. And specifically, I like to know about those big and bold experiences in people's lives, because I think those that listen to this show are looking for that real, authentic, vulnerable, and relatable experience about something that happened to them, but something with some high stakes. So what I'm looking for here is I'd love to know about a situation, about someone that changed your life and what it is that they did. It could be a positive thing. It could be a negative thing. It could be a mentor. It could be, you know, a friend. It could be anything. But I want to know about somebody that when that question is asked, you think of that person that you know your life would be totally different if it were not for them.
Oh, very much so. And I can, there's so many that I could point to. But the one that I would point to was a childhood friend. We actually went to high school together and I learned so much from him. And, you know, I come back now and say that he taught me that relationships are the ultimate currency. And he was a successful entrepreneur since then. He's passed away, but he tells the story of going out and trying to get a loan in a different state for a piece of property and that he couldn't get it. Whereas he could have written a check for it and bought it right out, but he couldn't get the realtor or the bank to give him the time of day because they didn't know who he was. And so as I look at that, you know, with this podcasting and all the rest of that, you know, that your net worth today is proportional to your network. And by net worth, I don't mean that it's just the money that's in your bank account, but it's the richness of your life. So if you want a richer life, you have to have a richer network. And so as I look at that, I look at people that I've met through podcasting, that I've been in masterminds with, that have made my life so much richer and have connected me so much more. You know, that whole idea of 6 degrees of separation, to me, that is, you know, Y2K. You know, today it's more like one or two levels if you're really connected with that. So with that, I would just say that, you know, there's so many, but the one that I would always point to is, you know, my friend Brian Mitchell that was the example of that. There was no more connected guy, no more guy that had a richer life and richer relationships. And the true testament was the variety of people that showed up at his funeral. It was just a testament to that.
So when did you, for you said you went to high school with this guy?
Correct.
At what point would you say that you saw that he was one of those connected people? And was this advice he passed on to you or just something that he led by example?
No, it was advice that he passed on. He passed away the same disease that Walter Payton had and liver disease that went pretty quickly. And he got very... he talked about different things over the last 6 months, and I think he had great insight on there. But here was a guy that could take different worlds. So he was a physician, he was an entrepreneur, he was even a record producer, and worked with some amazing bands from the 80s. And from that, could just see that his life was so much richer by the people that he connected to there. And I think now, sometimes the digital age makes us more isolated, right? So I can sit in my office and do everything I need to from behind a computer monitor. But in some ways, you know, if we did that to prisoners and isolated them, it'd be considered cruel and unusual punishment. But now, sometimes with technology, we do it to ourselves. So I think it's important to always connect with there.
It's interesting. It's, you know, you're one of the first to actually talk about that downside of technology. Usually when we're on the show, a lot of people talk about the upside of technology, but I agree. I think there's a certain danger in how these devices cause us to kind of retreat a bit from the actual interactions in person. So, you know, one, thank you for bringing that up. I think it's a super important point. I actually want to dig a little deeper on this before we move on, because I was actually, strangely enough, just before this conversation that you and I were having, I was having a conversation with Caroline, my producer, and we were talking about the sort of the lifeblood of what social media actually is, where you can connect with people and you can make new friends and you can expand your network. And it's sort of this unpredictable and very organic process. And when I look at what we try to do with our clients and you know, making their businesses social so that they can appreciate their employees and customers and all that jazz, it's all great. But where I want to flip the table on you and kind of see how you – so I buy the networking thing. I love my network. I grow my network. I believe that meeting new people makes me have more capacity to get things done than I ever could before. So I'm sold. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute, because I want to hear how you talk about this. How do you explain to that left-brained bean counter business person that relationships matter and have actual value when it's something that may be so immeasurable and so difficult to actually quantify the business value of?
That's a great question. It's like, how do you put an ROI on a relationship?
Exactly.
How do you put an ROI on a reputation? I would point to, there's a great book out there called The Speed of Trust. Stephen Covey's son wrote it, and he gives great examples in there that trust makes things go so much faster. He talks about a deal that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett did. And they did it over lunch because the two of them trusted each other. It saved 6 months of due diligence. It saved hundreds of millions of dollars of lawyer fees and all the rest of that because there was the trust there. And I would say the same thing goes on in our business, right? What's the cost of a sale? What's the cost of a customer acquisition? And I think as you look at that, and they want to be very, very quantifiable, one of the things I would point to is look at the time to close a sale based on different avenues they come in. So one of the things that we've seen in podcast interviews is that the time to close the sale is significantly less, and they convert at a much, much higher rate than just cold traffic. And really, it makes sense, right? So if you've already built up a relationship with them, they know, like, and trust you, it's a much better close rate. It's a faster close rate than, you know, just other forms of traffic. So I think that those people that say, well, what's the value in it? You can start pointing to actual metrics like that. And also point to the people that have the success and say, what's the success from? And you can maybe not quantifiably, but qualifiably point back to the relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all makes sense when you lay it out. And I think the way that you just framed it there, you know, I think you walk through it nicely, the speed of trust, and then you think about the time to close and talk about people who came through that trusted pathway. I'm a complete believer in it. I always kind of come back to thinking about those difficult prospects and whether or not it's our job as believers to either convert them to the belief, explain it to them so that they can see that process, or whether we just kind of assume that it's just time to leave them in the dust and work with the people that actually get it. So I always kind of sit on the fence about that. Is it important to make sure that people can see that which is difficult to see or quantify, or is it better just to let them lose out to those that value the relationships? I don't know. Where do you fall on it?
I guess I look at that as that you've got to make them aware of it. And so I'll always have that discussion, but ultimately what they do with it afterwards is up to them. So from the standpoint, you know, if you want to call it a conversion process, you know, whether or not you're converting them to religion, or you're converting them to the religion of you need to get on social media in order to save your business. This is the future of it. You can put it out to them. You can, you know, show them what it is, but ultimately they either decide or they don't. And I think the more time goes on, you know, there's just more evidence of that. You know, the dinosaurs are dying. Do you want to go the way of the dinosaur and just think it's just a trend, it's just a fad? But the other thing I think is important too is, and this is where maybe it's my generation, you know, I'm 52 years old, is trying to point out to them that this is the same thing that our grandparents did, and it's the same thing our our grandchildren will do. Yeah, the tools have changed a little bit, but you know, you have to connect with people. You have to have a presence out there. You have to have a reputation out there. And you know, maybe you know, a couple decades ago, that meant you have to have a Facebook ad, or I'm sorry, a Yellow Pages ad to be taken seriously. Well, you better be online now, because it's saying something one way or the other. You know, one of the things that we talk to our clients about before getting on a podcast interview is, you know, there's the message, the market, and the machine. You got to have all of those together. And I don't care how good of a podcast interview you have, how great of an expert you sound. If somebody goes and looks you up on the internet, and you don't have a social media presence, you don't have a website, you don't have something that builds trust, it's just going to destroy that. And I think from that standpoint, those are the foundational parts, and you've got to tell people about it and try to make them understand. But ultimately, they're either going to understand and thrive, or they don't, and they'll die.
Well, a lot of those people that don't sign on or ascribe to it and don't embrace the idea that the relationships matter, even if they're sometimes not quantifiable, we'll look back and inevitably say that was probably a poor decision. So in that vein, I'd like to ask you about something that maybe you wish you knew earlier in your career. So butterfly effect aside, assuming that the rest of your amazing life is still intact, but there's something you could go back and tell yourself about earlier in your career that would have made your life easier, made you happier, removed some stress, maybe helped you avoid some shortcomings and mistakes. What's the lesson you would give to yourself earlier in your career?
From the standpoint of don't reinvent the wheel, right? There's nothing new on this world. There's somebody that has already done this, somebody that's got a similar business that's further along in it. Learn from them, benchmark it. And I think so often in my life, I've said, well, I'm the only one that's ever had this problem, or my company is different, or, you know, I've got to figure this out myself. You know, no, what's ordinary to you is amazing to other people. So find those other people and, you know, just ask them the questions. If you keep asking enough, they'll go, oh yeah, this is how you do it. And you know, especially now, if you're isolated or ignorant, it's by choice. You can put questions out there and get amazing answers from it. You can, Google stuff and find out ways to do it. And often I was too proud or think I'm smart enough, I can figure this out. Well, yeah, maybe I am, but it'd be a whole lot easier to have other people help.
So that's a good learning lesson is you probably spend a lot of time trying to reinvent a wheel.
Yeah. And you know, the analogy that I use is a lot of times when I would do something, it'd be like trying to build a car, to build a hot rod. I'd want to build it in the garage, right? And I'll do it myself. I'll take the pride in it and I won't bring it out till it's perfect. Well, the problem is that it's never perfect. And so now I'm at the point where if I'm going to do something like that, I'm going to do it in the front yard. You know, 100 people will drive by, a couple of them will laugh at me, 90 of them will just drive by and not notice. But there'll be some people that'll stop and go, hey, this is great. Can I help with this? Or have you ever thought about doing that? And you'll get a better product and you'll have more fun with it. And this whole idea of, well, if I share my idea, somebody is going to steal it. There are no new ideas. Everybody has had the idea already. Everybody's got busy lives. You know, they've got their own ideas they're trying to execute on.
Yeah. So it really falls down to the execution.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. You've had a varied career. You've rolled with the punches. You've got a lot of things that you've learned. If you're looking out into the future, you've got a crystal ball and you start looking at, you know, the workforce of tomorrow. You look at the opportunities that are happening in the marketplace. You think about what's happening with technology. What do you think if somebody were listening to this and they were thinking, I don't really know what I should be thinking about next. What do you think is the most important skill of the future that they should be considering to learn?
And it would be actually learning, right? And I look back at my career and you could say it's varied and everything, but I look at every one, I learned something that built on to the next one. I look at where I am right now and I can point to all these different things that come together in the job I'm doing right now. And those people that just amaze me when you talk to them and they say out of pride that the last book they read was in high school or college, or that, you know, that they've got this, you know, career that they're going to retire from. I think the scariest thing is how fast the world is changing, and that you can't expect to do a job for your entire career. There's no safe lifetime jobs out there anymore. But you have to be continually learning so that you can take your experience that you have and be more valuable. You know, what makes me more valuable at 50 than somebody coming straight out of college at say 20 is, well, I've got 30 years of experiences, 30 years of relationships, connections, all the rest of that, that, you know, each decade you should be doubling your impact, not just incrementally doing it, because you've got all those different things. So from that, if you're listening to this, keep learning, because the world is changing. And if you're the one that's the learner, the one that can lead that, boy, you're always going to be in demand and at the cutting edge of things.
And that's a real mindset that you're really encouraging the development of, is just to be a lifelong learner, constantly looking for it. I, too, am always fascinated when I encounter someone who boasts about the fact that they haven't read something. I'm like, well, you should probably read a book then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could be the world's leader in whatever today. And, you know, a decade from now, if that's all you know and that's all you've learned, you'll be able to teach a history course in it. And if you don't believe that, there are programmers out there that used to program in Fortran and whatever it was, that now they could have been the best at the time. And now it's not even in demand.
Yeah, that's funny. It's like when my mom tries to tell me that she understands computers because she used to know DOS in like 1980 something. I'm like, yeah, but you can't even use a Mac. Like, so yeah, anyway. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions because I want to see what you say about them. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So you said you're an iPhone user. What are the apps that are in your dock?
Oh, definitely Audible, definitely Overcast to listen to podcasts. I love listening to them where it cuts out the dead air time, and it also speeds it up. It keeps my attention. Those are the big ones. I've taken social media off my phone and just put it in a little folder in there because it was just distracting me. Facebook and those things for me became a huge time sink.
Yep. So you have Audible, Overcast. What are the other two that are in your dock?
Oh, sure. The other ones in there would be Evernote is a great one. And the other one in there is I use Google Apps all the time. So that's in there.
Okay. Awesome. Next question. If there was only one application that like you just couldn't live without, you had to name the one thing that like it makes your life that much better, it'd be impossible for you to live without. It could be mobile, desktop, web, don't care. What's the one application?
For me, it's as much as I hate it, it would have to be Google. I got some issues with some of the things they do, but boy, the free things that they offer through Google Apps, I couldn't live without.
Got it. All social sites tomorrow are deleted except for one, and I'm giving you the ability to choose which one lives on. Which one is it?
To me, it's LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn because it's not not what I ate for breakfast this morning. It's really people working together.
Awesome. What's one business book every business person should read?
Thou Shalt Prosper by Rabbi Daniel Lappin. I'm not Jewish, but I love that book. It's probably the biggest gift I give to people. It's just a great way of looking at things differently, looking at business, looking at what money is, and looking at what service is. It'll change your view of the world, almost like the Matrix, of your view of the business after reading that book.
Awesome. So we've got Thou Shalt Prosper by Rabbi mm-hmm. who?
Daniel Lappin, Lapin.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Final question. Final rapid fire question. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
It would be reading other people's minds.
That's an interesting one. Reading other people's minds. I'm deconstructing you right now. All right. Well, you've been nice enough to come onto this show. I sincerely appreciate it. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about whatever the hell you want, things that you want to promote, things that you need help with, people you want to meet, people that you think should meet you, whatever it is you want to talk about. You've given us some of your time, Tom. I want you to tell people what it is you need from them or where they can go and find you or whatever else you want. It's your time.
You know, thanks, Jeff. And I appreciate everybody's time. And I don't want to make this an infomercial. I just, the one thing that I want to leave people with is we had talked about it before. What's ordinary to you is amazing to others, right? We've all got something that we could share with the world. So you can do that in so many ways, and it's so easy to do it today. The other thing is, if you've got a business, just remember that, you know, marketing at its heart is starting a conversation with somebody that could be an ideal customer. There's lots of ways to do that, but one of them is a podcast. And you know, you could be a podcast host or a podcast guest. You know, anybody that says doing their own podcast is easy has never done it or never done it well. And Jeff, my hat's off to you and your team. You put together a great show. But if you're just looking, you know, to get out there and get your word out, boy, consider being a podcast guest. It makes sense. It works. And you can do it yourself, or you can work with a company like ours, Interview Valet, to help you do that. And, you know, we'll let you be the guest while we'll take care of all the rest. We'll be your roadies for that. But whatever you do, man, you got something to share. You've got something that could really help somebody else's life. And please use the technology today to do that, because there's somebody out there that will look back, and when they're asked this question, they'll point to you. You may never know who they were, but boy, you could connect with them. And it's so easy to do from your home, from your office, on vacation, with the technology we have today. So please do that. And if we can be of any help, feel free to come back to interviewvalet.com. I'll put a special page up with everything that Jeff and I talked about here, interviewvalet.com/shareable. I'll have all my contact information there. Some resources. There's an infographic that shows the 6 ways to get on your first podcast. There's the checklist that I use for every one of my interviews. So you can learn from that. There's the link to the book, Podcast Guest Profits. And, you know, there's also all my email and social media. So if we can be of any service to you, I'd be thrilled.
Kick ass, man. Take 30 more seconds or so and tell people exactly what Interview Valet is, though. So you kind of glossed over the top of it, but give people the elevator pitch. What is Interview Valet? Oh, sure.
Okay. Thank you for asking for that. Interview Valet is a concierge level podcast interview system, right? So if you want to get out on podcasts to talk directly to your ideal customers, we help you do that. We do the pitching, we do the prospect, and we do the preparation. You do the actual interview, but then we do the progression, the promotion. We do everything. You get to be the guest. We'll take care of the rest. So if you want to use and leverage podcast interviews to grow your business, we can definitely help with that.
Amazing. Tom, thank you so much for coming on to Shareable today. And for all of you out there listening, this has been another fantastic episode of Shareable. Please come back and keep listening to them, whether you do or not. I'm going to keep making them because I get to talk to people like Tom and all of our other fabulous guests. So please come back and see us again. And this episode, like all the rest, has been incredibly shareable. That was so much fun. I can't even believe the guests that we get. I mean, can you believe the guests that we get?
I can, actually. I schedule them.
Awesome. Well done. Well, this episode for me was an absolute blast, and I hope everyone listening really enjoyed it. But now that we're in this fun little outro, what should people do next?
I think they should check us out on iTunes.
Definitely go check us out on iTunes, and when you get there, subscribe, drop us a review, and then what's that one last thing we want them to do?
I don't know.
Share the episode.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. It's in the name. So please share this episode, tell everyone you know, and we'll see you on the next episode of Shareable.
Bye.